This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Good afternoon to each of you, and I don't know how you are feeling at time of a day like this, but when we have been here a lot of the day and we have sat through many sessions, I know someone once said, the mind can only comprehend what the seat can endure. And I am guessing your seat probably has endured quite a bit today. And maybe you are just about ready to call it quit. And maybe you're about ready to shut down. But hopefully in this session, we also can glean something that can encourage you and build you up. I always, there's always something within me that would just love to reach into your heart or your mind and say, what was it that made you choose to come into a session like this? What made you pick a topic like this? What is it that's going on in your heart or your life right now, or your experience or your story that made you look at this topic? And again, I'm not sure if I'm going to hit or meet you where you're at, but I will share with you the material that has come to me. As Spencer said, I've been involved in school setting. I was administrator for 15 years. This year, I'm just simply on staff as a full-time teacher. Been involved with church work ever since I've been 24. I was 24 when I was ordained deacon, and 5 years later, I was ordained minister, and then around 8 years later, I was ordained bishop. And I will didn't say how many years I've been in church work. I'll just let you figure that out. It means I won't tell you my age. For us to think about this afternoon, preparing for ministry, I'd like us to zero in on the word effective. I don't know what comes to your mind when you think about being effective, but let's just do a little thought process here. I'd like you to do some thinking. What is it that makes a person effective? What is it that you would define makes a person effective? Let's just put a list of people here, and I'm asking the question, you don't need to write this down while let's just think through. Were these people effective in their ministry? And I'm going to give you a list of people. Was Moses effective? And you don't need to answer, just in your mind answer that. Was Moses effective? The Apostle Paul? How about Peter? Was he effective in his ministry? What about King Saul? Or what about King Solomon? Stephen, Judas, Epaphras. How many on this list were effective? How many were not effective? Well, let's just go back over the list. Moses, I think we probably would agree that he probably was effective. Apostle Paul, I think we probably would vote a definite yes. What about Peter? We probably would say yes. King Saul, was he effective? We might scratch him off the list. What about Solomon? Well, I put a question mark there. There's things about Solomon, obviously, that he contributed to us. There's things about Solomon we question about his life, maybe about his service, and we say, well, where does that fit in? What about Stephen? You know, we look at Stephen and the way he ended his life, and there was a man named Saul that was watching his death. Something effective happened at the end of Stephen's life. What about Judas? Was Judas effective? Well, we always would cross him off, and then stuck Epaphras up there, how many of you even know who he is? Or, you know, the Bible doesn't give us a lot about him. So was he effective or not? I checked that he was. If you study I think there's three verses in Scripture about Epaphras. But here's the question I'd like you to process. What criteria do you use? What is it that you use to determine whether someone is effective or not? And when you think about being effective in service or effective in ministry, what criteria are you measuring off of? And I won't take the time to have you respond, but I'd like you to think about what criteria you use. And then think about someone you know. Who is someone that you presently know that you would evaluate and say, you know what? They are a person that is effective in their ministry. They are a person that's effective in their service as they are involved in kingdom work or as they are involved in whatever they do. And I think that has been a good challenge of the last couple of days. Ministry is, no matter where you're at on the workplace or in the mission field or in the family, or I sat in various workshops and that came out. But what is it that makes them effective? And there's definitely people I think that we all could point to or we all would think about and say, you know what, that person has impacted my life or has impacted the lives of other people. And I'm asking you to evaluate and stop and look at that. What is it about them that has made them effective? Off of what measuring tool are you measuring them? The word effective is defined as being successful in producing a desired or intended result. So if someone is effective, that means then they accomplished a certain goal. That means there were certain results, there were certain outcomes that were achieved, and we're saying that made them effective. So I'm saying, if this is true, okay, I'm going off of what is dictionary definition of effectiveness, but if this is true, then we better figure out what the outcome is, okay? If the definition is true, then if I'm going to determine if something's effective, I better establish a standard. I better establish an outcome. And so if we send our student to grade two in school and come to the end of grade two and they need to decide, are they ready to pass to grade three or do they need to stay in grade two again? Somewhere there is a certain list of outcomes that need to be determined whether they have met or not. And if they have met those outcomes, then they can go on. And so there's a measuring tool established. There's a standard set. And I'm suggesting that effectiveness is only calculated off of a measurable standard. You know, you need to have something to measure yourself by. As a boy growing up, I had two single aunts who were very close to me, very dear to me. The one has passed on, the other one is still living. She is 89. I don't know how old I was. Maybe I was 10, but maybe I was a little older, but I was starting to go through a growth spurt. And these aunts were kind of like grandmas to me. My grandmas were not living, but my one aunt said to me, she said, I will pay you a dollar for every inch you grow. And she meant this way. Now I'd probably be getting money going this way, but at that point I was going to height. And so in their house, on their door frame, we would go there and I would put a mark. And then ever so often, and I mean it would go for a while sometimes, we would go back to that door frame and sometimes we'd actually kind of forget about this. And I actually remember, I think we went back one time and actually grown 4 inches. But we, you know, there was a standard. If there was nothing to measure me by, there would be no way to calculate whether growth had happened, whether effectiveness had happened. Also, even in the fact if we had no measuring tool, when we started at the floor and went up to the height where I was at, put that mark and said, okay, he is now 5 foot, or whatever it may be, we have a standard measurement to go by. We just can't randomly choose and say, well, you determine what 5 feet is, and you determine what 5 feet is for you, and what may be for you, it may not be for another person. We understand that that's not how standards and principles work. And so effectiveness is calculated off of having a measurable standard. So I'm asking us to think about, as we think about that measurable standard and we set, this is what it means to be effective in ministry, this is where I'm heading to, this is where the goals I'm going to, then it's going to require us some time to come up with some type of strategic planning, some type of effort, some type of work. How am I going to get there? How are we going to reach the goal? And there are a lot of resources, tools available today that will help you to meet your goal. And there's ways that you sit down and plan and say, we need to be here in 2 years, or we need to be here in 5 years, and whatever your goal may be, whether it's paying off your house or what, any some other type of goal you're setting, you set steps, and this is what you work to. And Suzette and I as a family have at times, I shouldn't say at times, numerous times, oftentimes when we go out to eat together, which shows that maybe we don't go out that often, but we sit down at least once a year sometimes, we say, what are our goals that we desire to see in our children? What are things that we long to see them grow in, accomplish over the next year? And we write those down on a list of paper. Well, to really be effective, you also need to have steps forward to to get you there. You can't just set some goal out in the distance and say, this is where I'm heading, and then totally drive the other direction, totally or not even plan to get there. And so effectiveness, I'm suggesting, is determined as we set measurable standards and then that we set an outline or a plan to get there. And so whatever your ministry may be, or whatever your goal may be, it may have a preparation plan that could include some of these things. And I'm just throwing with this slide here random ideas. Maybe your goal is the medical field. Well, obviously, you will never be a doctor without some type of medical training. Or you'll never be a doctor that I would want to come to without some type of medical training. You know, I mean, it's just necessary. You will need to go to med school. And, you know, it's interesting. I just had a student come back, graduated, came back this week and talked to our seniors, not about his medical training, but he had the goal of being a nurse, set that goal, took a number of years to get there, but he had his goal, worked for it, and that was the ministry that he's now engaging to be involved in. If you're planning to be a teacher, it's probably going to require some type of preparation. Maybe you're going to plan to go to college. Maybe you're going to go to Faith Builders. Maybe you're going to jump in for a year and swim. I don't know. But preparation definitely will help you. Maybe it's missions. And so you may need to consider things about language study. And, you know, the list could go on. I just sat briefly in the mission training workshop and from the Mission Training Center in New York City. Good things that they can give to help prepare someone that's looking at missions. Maybe it's parenting. Now, I wasn't quite sure what to put on that blank. How do you prepare to be a parent? I don't know. My wife just walked in. Maybe I should ask her, how do we prepare? I think we just jumped in. But there's definitely lots of resources out there to help you prepare to be parents. Maybe it's being an electrician. Maybe it's being a computer programmer. What about being a pastor? And I think there are ways and should be ways that we help develop our pastors, and yet even the role that I serve in, I struggle sometimes. Am I giving those who I am attempting to mentor the tools they need? And so, you know, I didn't write down seminary on there. Speaking to an Anabaptist group, that isn't really part of our who we are. And yet, we maybe could save each other some, not saying we should go to seminary, but maybe we should think through the preparation part of that as well. Well, here's where I want to go with where we're thinking about today. Preparation and ministry. And I'm suggesting that there is a major preparation and there's a minor preparation. And I'm afraid sometimes we get these two reversed. And what I'm going to give you is nothing profound. It's nothing that you probably haven't heard before. But when I process and I think about those that I look up to, those who are effective in ministry, those whose lives have really touched mine and have made a difference, I'm convinced that they understood the difference between the major and the minor. And if you and I are going to be effective in our ministry and our relating to people, and it's not that our ministry needs to be that I have some title, that I'm the school administrator, I'm the pastor, I'm a parent, or whatever it may be. Maybe you're just being effective in reaching your friends and being a good friend. That can be a ministry. I'm saying the major preparations are those things that need to take top priority. The minor preparations are the secondary in nature. Now, this is what I want you to note. I am suggesting, and you can disagree with me, but I am suggesting that all the things that I just gave you on the previous slide fall under the minor preparations. Now, you may say, a doctor and med school is a minor preparation. 12 years of schooling, clinics, whatever all is involved, you're calling that minor? Well, it's by far major to some degree. But I'm suggesting there's something that I've looked at individuals and said, you know what, there's still something more major. There's still something that holds a greater weight, that if we miss this, then our ministry and our involvement in the lives of other people is not going to be as effective as what it could be. And so what is that major preparation? Where are we going here? Well, I'm going to kind of start off maybe a little bit on the negative side and then hope to build more of the positive. But what am I calling the major preparation? Now let's just make this statement before I really give you that answer. The failure to be effective in ministry is often not the result of a lack of preparation in the minor area. You know, the reason the person maybe was not effective is not that he hadn't gone to Faith Builders, or it's not that he didn't go get his college training, or it's not that he didn't work hard and get straight A's in high school. They succeeded on the minors, but somehow they missed it in the major area. And I'm saying ineffective individuals in ministry are individuals who failed to deal with the core issue of mankind. And here's where I'm going. Effective destroyers, and there may be things that we could put on the list, and there could be maybe lots of things we put on the list. But as I look at settings, and as I look at that individual sometimes and say, do you know what? If this was maybe shaped or cultivated or dealt with maybe just a little bit greater level, they would be more effective to reach the lives of people. And this is what I'm calling. It's called pride. I believe at the core of human man is self-centeredness. At the core of who we are is a nature that's built around making us look good, making us be the center, making us be important. At the core of who we are is this pride that wants to be noticed and wants to be recognized and wants to be identified. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to do a good job, and there's nothing wrong, I believe, that in wanting to be effective. But when ministry is about me, that's a sure sign of being a destroyer. And let's just look at some of the examples in Scripture. When I think about pride at the root of causing some to be non-effective in service, think about King Saul. This verse says, when thou was little in thy sight. Saul, when you had an understanding of who you are, when I called you, you had yourself in perspective of who you really were. But Saul somewhere came to a point in his life where he was no longer little in his sight. And his view of who he was and who his ministry was and what his kingdom was about became more about who he was than about who God was. And it caused him to be ineffective. Think about King Uzziah. It says the words, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. We want a sure sign or a sure path to being ineffective in ministry. Just allow pride to begin to develop in your life. And you will begin to have people react against you instead of be drawn towards you. Think about Nebuchadnezzar. Man, we know that known for his prideful heart. He made the statement that I have built by the might of my power. I remember brother sharing with me, he was on the mission field. The board came to visit, deputation visits. A particular board member came down, and the brother on the mission field shared with me his concern about, he said, I didn't know this person before he came. He said, but as I sat related to talk to him, he said, I discovered that life was about him. He was a pastor, but life was about him. You know, is that what people say about us? Are we, when we talk, do we talk about what we've done and what we're involved in and our stories? And I'll be honest, it's easy for me to do that. And it's easy at times that we can get caught up in what we are about. James says, God resists the proud. And I tell students at school, when I think of this verse, I picture it like this, that God is holding out his hand. When he resists something, he is holding out his hand. And if you want to do something that's going to cause God to hold you at arm's length, and you allow pride to develop in your heart, or you fail to deal with the pride that could be there. Proverbs 16:5 says, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Jeremiah talks about, I am against thee, O thou most proud. And we're talking about the major area of preparation. We're talking about being effective. And I'm saying, if we're going to be effective, then there's another school that we're going to need to submit to. There's another school that God's going to want to take us through. And I don't know a lot of you. In fact, I don't know most of you. But I long for all of you to be individuals that God can use in His kingdom, that people can be drawn to, that people long to come and feast, in a sense, in your presence because of who you are. Or rather be maybe because who God is in you. And it's going to call us to go through the school of God. And the quality, I believe, that makes us effective is humility and brokenness. And I can't stand here and give you step one, step two, and step three, and say, you've got it. Go out and be effective. Nor is preparing, you prepare for 20 years, and that year 20, you've got it down pat, and now you're good to go. It's a journey of walking with God. And so let's just think about the first name that I think I had on the list, and that was Moses. We know his life is divided into three 40-year periods. He was in the palace, he was in the wilderness, he was leading the children of Israel. I believe each of those four steps was in God's plan, and God was working on Moses in that time. But God's major preparation involves wilderness wanderings. Let's just think about a few people in Scripture. I already mentioned Moses. Moses spent time in the desert. And when we think about where Moses was at year 40 of his life, and where he was at year 80 of his life, it's two different points. Year 40, some sense we could say he was taking leadership into his hands. Age 80, he said, God, go send someone else. Now, not that that's what we're saying where we should be, but the fact was that there was a part, something happened to Moses while he was in the wilderness. And I believe effectiveness is developed out of wilderness experiences. Or let me just clarify that statement a little bit. Let me give you a few more names. Think about Paul. It tells us that he went to Arabia. We don't know a lot or how long necessarily maybe he spent there. But somehow I see in Paul's time, he got some time to be alone. Think of David. David was on the run from Saul. And what all did God develop in the heart of David when he was knew he was going to be king, but he wasn't there yet? One of the things we were encouraged to do is suggest some reading that maybe goes along with the topic. I didn't come up with any, but if there'd be one book I would suggest for you to read, it would be The Tale of Three Kings by Gene Edwards. And I think that book covers the concept of what I'm trying to bring through, and it particularly does in the life of David. We're going to look at other missionaries, Gladys Allward, Amy Carmichael. You look at the lives of those that we may say were effective, and you will discover that in their lives, they had some wilderness experiences. I remember earlier in our marriage, actually when we started attending the church where I was ordained, we were a fairly large church, or larger than what we had, where we presently have been attending. And so there were a lot of people to learn to know. And I remember, I don't know if I verbalized this always, but I'd say to my wife, why is it, we talk about, there's some people that there just has a depth to them. Or there's something about them that you're drawn to, and there's content in a sense to their life. And then you have other people that it's kind of shallow living on the surface. What makes the difference? And then I discovered there's one particular couple I'm thinking about, that I thought about that there was some content there. And then I discovered before we had learned to know them that their third child had died I don't remember how many months after he was born. And there was more to that lady's story, too, that I'm not going to say here, but, you know, there was a journey in her life that God developed her, and she had allowed God to develop her in. And as I look at people that are effective in ministry, I'm saying they are people that have allowed God to use their story, their life, their wildernesses to develop their ministry and to develop their effectiveness. John Drescher in his book, here would be another book. It's just a really small book. You don't need to be a pastor to read this. Good material in here. He says, effective ministry comes from those areas where I've allowed the Lord to touch me. God has performed his work in me. I will likely be more of a hindrance than a help to others in ministry until God has performed his work in me. This is not to say that God is not blessed beyond my puny faith and weak endeavor. What it does say is that where I am most effective will be in the areas where God has called me to greater faithfulness, where I've responded in obedience. I should not expect people to pray if I am not a person of prayer. I should not expect people to be sacrificial givers if I am not giving sacrificially. But I like the part where he says, if I am going to be effective, it's going to be in those areas where I've allowed God to touch. And so I think about wilderness wanderings, and you know, all of us here have stories. And all of us here have parts of our lives, and maybe there's some parts of our lives that are not exactly the most pleasant. Maybe there's parts of our lives that are not the greatest part. But in those parts, has God been able to break you, to shape you, to mold you? I have a brother sitting back here, one of my fellow bishops now, but the reason him and I had the first conversation, I remember having a winter Bible school topic on death, and I had lost my father when I was 15, and he had lost his father as well. And that night we shared after the service, and we connected, and I think that's been the bond that's connected you and I ever since that. That's been a real part of my story. I was 15, my father was killed very suddenly. He was killed cutting down a tree. Went to school one day, life was fine in a sense. Came home, or at school found out that there had been an accident and he was killed. And God developed a lot in my life through that part of my story. But the point I want to make, I said, you know, it doesn't just start here and then all of a sudden you've dealt with this. You know, I was called to the ministry at age 24. There was a lot of corners and edges along the way that God needed to continue to take off. In fact, it was only a number of years ago I went through a very low point emotionally where I felt like I was at my end. And I actually had almost concluded, you know what, I don't think I'll ever preach again. I don't see how I'm ever going to get up again. I was spent. And as difficult as that time was, it was good. And I'm not sure my wife will agree with that. But there was things that God taught me. You know what? It's not about us. You know, when I get up to preach, it is not about me. It's not about who I am. It's not about what I have to say. It's about what Jesus wants to do in and through us. And so it calls us to the next point there. As Moses was out in the desert in Exodus chapter 3, 5 to 6, God says, draw not nigh hither, but first put off your shoes. Moses, you're standing on holy ground. Moses, you're standing in my presence. And I believe that people that are effective in ministry are people that have somewhere on the journey come into the reality that they are standing in the presence of God. And that there's holy ground. And on those moments of holy ground are when we become aware of the presence of God. We become aware of his presence in a real way. And I told you about saying that I went through a low time emotionally. But I remember during that time laying there on the sofa, and it was as if the voice of God said to me in my heart, Dwayne, it's going to be okay. And I held on to that. And God led and continued to develop. But the awareness of the presence of God, and then awareness of my own inabilities. What are we attempting to develop in our lives? Humility, or what's God attempting to develop? It's humility. I'm suggesting the thing that destroys our effectiveness is pride. The thing that creates and builds our ministry is humility. And when we open our hearts to the school of God and we allow Him to lead us and develop us and shape us in those steps, and maybe we need to go through those steps more than once. And if you ever listen to the pineapple story, he says you go around the cycle several times and then you're in grade one and grade two. It's that ongoing process of God shaping us. And then God says, Moses, I want you to go back to Egypt. And I want you to go back to my people, and I want you to lead them. And, you know, Moses had his reasons not to go, and he had his excuses. You know what? It wasn't Moses' ministry. It was God's ministry. And a ministry that is not my own. A ministry that's not me. When I look at people that I view as being effective, or people that understand that, you know what, this ministry is not about who we are. It's not about us. When I understood, and I don't know that I had to go process to understand this, but as I worked at Terry Hill High School, Terry Hill High School was not about who we are, who I was. As I'm anticipating, we're anticipating 2016, a move to IGO. IGO is not about who we are or about IGO itself. You know, you don't need to go to IGO to be effective. It's part of who God is and what God wants to do in our lives and what He wants to develop in our work and in our walk. And when the ministry is about God, that's when we become effective. God is not waiting for you and I to change so He can use us. He's not waiting for you to change so that He can use you, but rather you change as a result of God using you. And so it's a journey, it's a process. And so when we think about preparation, we're going to come back yet to the smaller, the minor. But there's a major part that I believe we come to and say, God, here I am. I want to walk with you, and He's got to lead you. As I talk sometimes about dealing with pain and painful experiences, some people say, well, you know, I never went through some of those things. Am I able to reach out and minister to people? Well, of course you are. But you don't need to go searching for settings, but you speak and you live out of your own story. But that story is not about who we are. And then I think about Moses, and we go back. I'm kind of going backwards in his life, but palace preparations. You know what? All our lives have been developed and shaped by various settings and situations. You may have grown up in the city, or you may have grown up in the country, or you may have grown up wherever, but whatever it was, maybe you were homeschooled, maybe you went to public school, maybe you went to a Christian school, maybe you went to a large school, small school, big family, small family, only child, whatever it was. All those things are part of the training of who God wants you to be. And when we look at Moses, Moses was skilled in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. I mean, God had a great work for him to do, and I believe maybe even before Moses totally understood what he was going to do, God was developing and shaping and preparing him. And so you look at the list of things that prepared Moses for his job, and there were numerous things there that got him ready for what God wanted him to do. And a number of years I worked at a woodworking manufacturing place, I worked there 12 years. The last 4 years I worked in customer service. And one of the things I found interesting was I went into the office doing one job, and I was in that position for a while, and then without even searching or trying, my superiors or whoever it was came and said, here, would you like to do this? And so I kind of took another step, and it built off of what I knew from the previous one, and then took another step. And when I left there, I was leading a team of four people or so there in the office. And, you know, and I look back on that, and all those steps prepare me. And I went to Terry Hill High School, and prior to leaving the office sitting there for several years, I'd worked under a boss that I got along with fairly well and was fairly easy to work for. And then my last, I don't know if it was a year or less than a year, worked for a man that wasn't maybe as easy to work for, but was good in administration, and I learned things from him. And all of a sudden, then I'm in administrative setting there at school, and I had some say, you know what, there are things that I learned from this non-Christian man about administration that I'm using here at school. And all those things began steps and became part of the story of what God, I believe, was developing in my life. And that doesn't say that we don't come back and develop what I'm calling the minor areas. Nor do we say, okay, you tell me that there's a major area and a minor area. I'll work on the major area for 20 years and then start the minors. That's not how it works. But I want us to keep in perspective that while we're working in what I'm calling the minor areas, let's understand that there's a greater and deeper call that God's calling us to. And let's understand that just because I've graduated from college, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm guaranteed to be effective. And there's nothing wrong with graduating with college. I encourage you to do that. But I'm calling us that effectiveness is built off of those who God has touched and the Spirit of God lives and dwells and moves in them. Don't ever buy into it. In fact, I'm glad we have days like this. I wrestle when I see and feel within our community sometimes that ignorance is bliss. When we maybe don't have a promotion or encouragement for education. Ignorance is not bliss. And we need to learn. We need to study. So make the most of the available resources that you have. And one of your greatest resources is people. Learn the most, gain the most, develop the most from the people that you have around you. I have learned so much from people I've served with. When I was 24, and I look back now on it, I'm 47, I told you I wasn't going to tell you my age, but I look back and say, you know what, I was awfully young and naive, and I don't know what else when I was first ordained. But when I was ordained on a team, and there was actually two of us ordained deacons at the same time. But I went on that team where there were several older men, and I said, you know what, I told myself, I am going to learn everything I can from these individuals that are on this ministry team. And I attempted to do that. And I look back, a lot of how I think yet sometimes in church leadership and administration goes back to those first 2 years where I recognized and said, I have a lot to learn. And I attempted to use the resources of the people around me. There's educational opportunities. Take the opportunities that you have around you. Make the most of them. Push yourself to learn and develop. We have resources today that are available for us that other generations didn't have. When I sat in the ministry workshop this morning of the All Nations Bible Translations or whatever the title is, to me that's exciting. There's in our Anabaptist setting individuals who are working on Bible translation. And you know what? That comes with work. That is not going to come without studying Hebrew and studying Greek and building a foundation. There's going to need to be minor preparations, which are major. But those preparations will never replace and never take the place of a heart that needs to be developed for God. Now, you can study Greek all you want to, and you still can have a proud heart. You study Hebrew all you want to, it's not going to make you a humble person. There's a schooling of God that we're called to walk through. Vocational opportunities. I have a son that the thought of going to college would be very, very foreign to him. Right, Austin? You know what? He has a job where he works with hands-on manufacturing, and he loves it. I don't ever, he hasn't been working that long, but I don't ever recall him complaining about having to go to work. I do remember him complaining about homework and schooling. You know what, all of us are created differently. I've told my students at school, I don't think God would ever call me in the mission field to be a maintenance man. In fact, I'm convinced he wouldn't. I had to laugh, though, one of the job descriptions, I think, with the assistant administrator at IGO was being overseeing some of the maintenance. I said, wait, I might have to reverse my statement. Hopefully that's not true, but or we can work some now. You know what, hands-on things. My theory of life is if I try to fix it, it usually gets worse. And what's broken is usually breaks some more. But you know what, that's not how everyone is. Use the opportunities. Develop, learn. And then there's ministry opportunities. And we've encouraged our children to be involved in Tuesday night ministries where they go in and work with urban children. There's a lot they can learn other than attempting to build relationships with the city children. There's a lot you can learn about what it means to be effective in ministry. I'm going to give you two last sentences yet that are not on your worksheet, but both come up there. I've often made this statement. Life is a combination of the sovereignty of God. You know what? There's things in our lives that we can't change. When I was 15, and God reached into our family and called my father home very suddenly, that was the sovereignty of God. I had no control over that. There was no matter what I could have done that would have changed that event that happened that day. But you know what? I am a free creature with a will. And I do have a choice as to how I'm going to respond to that situation. And when that happened in our life, I'll be honest, I grew up in a setting and I kind of viewed our family like we were nobodies. We were just kind of this average family, didn't have a lot of friends. You know what? And God reached his hand in our family that day, and we had support, the viewing, and all of a sudden, he had touched our family in a way like he never had. And then later, a couple years later, that was my sophomore year in high school, and then my senior year in high school, as if the Lord reached his hand in my life again and said, "Dwayne, I'm going to crack you out of your shell, and I have plans for you that you don't even realize." My dad was kind of a behind-the-scenes man, and there's nothing wrong with that, but he wasn't one to get up front. And I just thought, well, I'll always be just like Dad. I'll be like Dad. And I was a shy boy growing up. I barely speak of peep. And my high school years, God says, "Dwayne, I have other plans for you." And you looked at your dad, and there was nothing wrong with being like your dad, but I have other things for you to do. And I was able to say, "Lord, whatever you want to do with my life, I want you to be able to do." See, we have a choice as to how we're going to respond to those situations. And then I think about ministry and service, and I say, ministry and service is a combination of the sovereignty of God. You know what? There are some things that I cannot prepare for, or some things that I don't totally know how to prepare for that are going to come down the road. One of the things that developed us in our family's journey was we had a daughter that struggled with health issues for several years. And my wife could come up here and tell you her perspective of what it's like to watch your daughter, who was high energy, full energy, lots of just active, sit on the rocker in pain and not really know what's wrong, and go to doctor after doctor after doctor. Have one doctor tell you, "Well, it's probably in your head, or you're just going through a period in your life." Wasn't an easy time. She did have Lyme disease. God did touch her. Today she's back, high energy again, loves to run. When she ran in a 5K, I think the biggest thing that my wife and I looked at each other and said, "You know what? That's God's touch." You know what? It wasn't about us. It's not about her. And through those years, God developed her story. We couldn't plan for it. But then there's a free will man. There's things we can plan for. Don't walk out of here saying, "Well, those are minor issues." I encourage you to walk out here and keep continuing to pick the steps. Where's the goals that God wants me to go to? What's it going to involve? What's it going to include? Maybe I do need to consider a term at Faith Builders. Maybe I do need to go to SMBI. Maybe I do need to respond to one of the needs that are presented here this week. What's God calling? But effective people are people, I believe, that have allowed the Lord to touch and shape them and change them and minister their hearts. And I know we're not here to brag and build up people, but Jim Weaver, who's a minister in our Keystone Churches, we've talked about this together. And Brother Val Yoder is a man that I look at that I consider has been an effective leader. His heart, his passion, his compassion, the fact that he has allowed God to take him through that school. And the reason I mentioned Jim's name one time, we were talking about it, and Jim said, you know what? Val Yoder to me has to be one of the most godly men I know. And I said, you know what? I agree with that. And I'm not saying that here to rag Val up, and he wouldn't want me to do that. I'm just saying, effectiveness comes when we allow the Lord to develop our hearts. God's blessing to you. My time is up, and continue on to where God has called you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.